702. 702. On 92.7 and 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
7 minutes past 6 o'clock. The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield and me tonight is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's African Nacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Well, coming up on the program in the next hour, the High Court in Cape Town has handed down judgments in a groundbreaking case that will bring financial relief for millions of debt-ridden consumers. It's something that you'd need to do. Really need to listen to this next interview. Then Boris Johnson and his Conservatives have won the election. This means Brexit is going ahead. What does this mean for its trading partners, in other words, South Africa? A strong day on the JSE. The markets closing up as South Africa heads into the long weekend. Taking a closer look at how we finished for this week. And then later on, I'll be looking at the best bits of the Money Show, and you need to pay attention because the brutal biz quiz will be played at about 10 to 7 tonight, and I'd like you to enter. It's just for fun tonight, just for a little bit of giggles tonight, and let's see if you've been paying attention this entire week. I'd like to hear from you. Do give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Right, let's get to our top story. The High Court in Cape Town has handed down judgment in a groundbreaking case that will bring financial relief for millions of debt-ridden consumers. Summit Financial Partners, the Stellenbosch Law Clinic, and 10 of their clients challenged the excessive overcharging of debt collection fees on garnishee orders, which are charged in defiance of allowances made by the law. Earlier on, I spoke to the CEO of Summit Financial Services, Clark Gardner. I asked him, what exactly does this mean for consumers?
So you're right, it is groundbreaking in that I think with this favourable judgment, we've stopped any current and future abuse on garnishee deductions. Now, a garnishee order is where credit providers make use of courts to garnish salaries. In other words, they get a court to order an employer to make a deduction of an employee's salary to pay back on defaulted debt. Now, what happens in that mechanism, which we've tried to fight for years, is that all sorts of fees, especially legal fees and similar, get charged to those consumers' accounts, and they're left with a bill that way exceeds the amount of debt that was originally outstanding. So to give you an example, if you have a 500 Rand loan and you default on it, you end up with a garnishee order that's deducting way in excess of 5,000 Rand.
Wow. I mean, this is way overdue. We've been down this road for such a long time now. Why is this only happening now? I mean, why has there not been stricter regulation before?
So the truth is, right, Ray, the law is currently there to protect the consumer. In Section 101 of the National Credit Act and 103 of the National Credit Act, even the Magistrates' Court Act. And the problem was that big industry regulators, referees, industry bodies had no incentive to stop this abuse and make sure that the law was enforced. It took parties being the Stellenbosch University Law Clinic and Summit Financial Partners to take on this fight because no one else was correctly incentivized to do it. So to give you an example, you know, we did the job, one could say, of the body that represents lawyers to make sure that industry is not brought into disrepute. And also that there is a fair legal fees being charged throughout. And they not only didn't do this on the consumer's behalf, they were our biggest opposition in this case. So the Legal Practice Council, which represents all lawyers, they were our biggest opposition, and they made this hard to stop the abuse of legal fees being charged in excess of what is due by consumers.
Mm. All right, hearing you say this, I would think then that refunds would have to be paid back.
Correct, on twofold. Firstly, all garnishee orders that charged legal fees that were not taxed, which is almost all of those involved in the unsecured credit industry, for the past 2 years should be refunded back to clients or taxed, which is basically impossible to do. So that's the one aspect. And secondly, all garnishee orders that deducted more than double the capital outstanding on the time of default also is required to be refunded to consumers. And if we add and we look at this industry, it will amount to 2, 3, 4 billion rand that consumers need to be refunded or written off, which we're going to get to work with immediately this evening and make sure that in the next 6 months, this gets into the pockets of consumers.
You aren't wasting any time, are you? Now the High Court has ruled in this matter. Are you thinking perhaps there could be some sort of appeal here?
I would struggle to see which parties would appeal. So, I mean, again, the LPC, the Legal Practitioners Council, their mandate is to make sure that they ensure the industry is not brought into disrepute. And it is being brought into disrepute by the fees that they're charged. The other parties, the National Credit Regulator, BASA, being the Banking Association, opposed us. But again, those two weren't really opposing us. They were looking for their own interpretation. Lastly, Bayport, which is the lender and the biggest user of garnishee deductions on the public servant's payroll, they were the last, and they might appeal us. The difference, I suppose, where I sit is that the a big shareholder of theirs, 25% plus shareholder, is the PIC. That is public servants' pension money that is invested in Bayport, and Bayport is saying, no, it's okay to charge these kind of fees, interest, and similar to public servant salaries. So I'm hoping their biggest shareholder, one of their biggest shareholders being the PIC, will say to Bayport, no, don't appeal this. You know, this is our members. We're trying to protect our members, so don't do that.
This is huge, though. And you say starting tonight, are you going to be able to handle the influx of people needing your help?
We have thought about that, and the best approach to this is to lobby the employers, who are the ones that control the garnishee deductions, to say to the employers, look, firstly, there's a lot of money that's due to your employees, so stop those deductions that are deducting more than double capital outstanding on default. Stop those deductions that are claiming legal fees that are not taxed, and get to work on those that are paid up that therefore deserve refunds. So we would urge and lobby the employers to say, hey, guys, you're empowered here to give money back into the pockets of your really stressed and debt-stressed employees. And we're glad to help you do that. But that's the best angle. Let's work with the employers to stop this abuse.
CEO of Summit Financial Services, Clark Gardner. Great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you for taking the time.
Only a pleasure. Thank you, Ray.
Connect. Engage. Change. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
Just gone a 6:15, and UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has visited the Queen in Buckingham Palace, asking her for permission to form a government. That was the big thing today. He went out in his whole motorcade and he went up to Buckingham Palace. Well, the Conservative Party in the UK has won a landslide victory in the national elections there. So this means the Brexit is cast in stone with a promise of next month for delivery. We'll have to wait and see if that is going to happen. On the line, he's economist at the Northwest University Business School, Professor Raymond Parsons. Good evening, Professor. Welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray.
This is a huge vote of confidence in the Prime Minister and Brexit. I mean, what does this mean for us, though?
Well, I think the first point of departure must be that this huge majority for the Conservative Party is very much about Brexit. And as you've indicated, they will now pass the necessary legislation through their parliament in time to leave the EU formally on the 31st of January. But we must remember that is just to initiate the first phase of Brexit, because over the next 12 months, they will, to all intents and purposes, still be in the EU while they use that period to negotiate a new free trade agreement, which they need to do by the end of next year. Failing that, technically, they could then crash out of the EU without a deal if that period is not extended. And, of course, Mr. Johnson has already indicated he doesn't wish to extend that period. So I think that's where we are. And when we talk about the South African situation, I think in the first place, it's important to understand that Brexit is a process. It's not an event. So it's going to unfold over the next year or two, and even longer, depending on how long these further negotiations will take. So that gives everyone, all third countries, like South Africa, who do business with the EU will give them time to adjust to whatever changes might emerge in the trading relationship between the United Kingdom and the EU. Then secondly, what's important in any case is that South Africa did to the Southern African Customs Union 2 or 3 months ago, we did negotiate an agreement with the United Kingdom to ensure that our tariff regime and our tariff arrangements with the United Kingdom, in whom we have a big trading stake, of course, will remain unchanged for now in the post-Brexit period. So that gives us the necessary continuity as South Africans and predictability that although the Brexit process has now commenced, our trading relationship with the United Kingdom will remain intact for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So I think, in a nutshell, that's where we are now.
Now, Professor, the deal that they've struck so far, or the talks that they've had of the EU so far, where does the UK stand with that? Because it looks like that Boris Johnson has won the first round. It's great. He's had this huge landslide victory. But like you say, it could end really badly.
Well, I think the important point is that, understandably, it is their decision as a country to decide politically and economically about the, their future, although it may have collateral consequences for third countries. But the important point here is that we must see this election outcome as a step towards, as the Prime Minister would say, getting Brexit done. But it's not a silver bullet, simply because there lie very complex negotiations, as I've indicated ahead, to formulate a new free trade agreement between the United Kingdom and the EU, which could take a year, it could take longer. It will also embody some uncertainties, of course. But the major thing now is that with this decision, with this political decision, the huge cloud of uncertainty which had descended on both British and EU business people as to where they were going with Brexit, that has been brought to an end. And now there is a degree of certainty that for the foreseeable future, we know what the process, what they know, what the Brexit process is going to be. They can do business under those arrangements for the time being. But like South Africa, we will need to watch the situation, because although our interests have been protected by these arrangements we've made with the United Kingdom, we're living in a changing world. This is a big decision for both the United Kingdom and the EU as to their future relationships. So other options will arise as Britain gets the freedom to do bilateral agreements with other countries. So we will have to continue to monitor and nurture our interests in the United Kingdom as this Brexit process unfolds.
Professor, just hearing you say that, I mean, a very broad question. There was talk of going back to do another referendum, although now we've seen a general election in favour of the Prime Minister. Is Brexit a bad idea or a good idea, in your opinion?
Well, speaking as an economist, if I'd been a voter in the US election, I would have voted for Remain and reform. In other words, stay in the EU, but reform it. But it's not my decision. It's their decision. And it's important that they make their own choices as to how they see the future for themselves. There will be some costs to dislodging yourself and seeking to withdraw from a common market which you've enjoyed for nearly half a century. And that is precisely why there is a withdrawal agreement already in place, so that, in essence, as we like to use the phrase, they're opting for a soft Brexit. In other words, it will be phased in. Of course, there will be some internal political tensions as far as Scotland and, of course, Northern Ireland are concerned, both of which are still strongly remain. And so, as the next year or two unfolds, we must also watch what would happen with Scotland, with the broader common market within the within the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
In the longer term, that will come under strain. But the important point now is that a political decision has been taken to proceed. There's a green light and a strong mandate. And in fact, one could even argue that the strong mandate of about 80 seats, which appears to be the majority, will give Mr. Johnson to be more flexible about options that he might otherwise not have had he been hostage to the radical Brexiteers even after this election.
Yeah, you're quite right, yeah.
The important point now is that this is a decision which the UK has now finally taken after the gridlock in their parliament has now been broken. They now have a strong mandate to go ahead. They must deal with it now in a step-by-step process, which is what it is. As I said earlier, it's a process, not an event. And therefore, we in South Africa, who have a huge stake in the welfare of the UK economy and also the EU, I think we must just continue to monitor the situation and be ready to deal with any new developments that might unfold in the period ahead.
We'll have to leave it there. Professor Raymond Parsons on the line from the University of the Northwest Business School. Thanks for coming on to The Money Show. I do appreciate your time.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Well, joining us is Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, a very strong finish on the markets today. Some people must be smiling.
Ray, good evening. Yeah, smiling, and 9 trading days left till the end of 2019. And yes, a nice way to finish. 1.7% up on the top 40. All share pretty much the same. Volume, I must be said, has been around about 17, 18 billion value traded. Today, 26 billion value traded. So I guess you could say, you know, real money coming in, a little squeeze into year end. And we mustn't be pessimistic as stockbrokers. We got to enjoy the euphoria while it lasts.
One of the things I hate doing the most are the financial bulletins, because every day it's Trump and China and the US. And you repeat yourself and you repeat yourself. Yet today it was again Trump, China and the US and thumbs up.
So I host a morning meeting at Sanlam Private Wealth, and I think every single morning for the last 6 months, as I've been cutting and pasting, markets are up because of China deal, Trump deal, tweet deal, whatever it's going to be. But I guess today maybe we're seeing a little bit of the end game. So this coming Sunday, while we are sitting on a long weekend in South Africa, is actually the deadline for the tariffs. It's going to be on the 16th. So it was almost like the end game is here. Lots of news flow today, Paray. I mean, we've seen that the deal has been signed. We don't know too much of the details. And what I can understand from the Chinese administration, very little on giving details too. But market sees it. The algorithmic traders like it. We see the headlines. It looks like an end game. Topping onto the back of a decent and a successful outcome for the Conservatives in the United Kingdom. And today was a classic day, Ray, of just risk on, and the markets ran away with it.
A perfect rainbow, some people may say. I mean, it's interesting because the Rand came under fire. It was Eskom and load shedding, and on it went and on it went, and now sunshine.
Yeah, I mean, be careful what you wish for in South Africa. You know, I made a comment to some clients a week or two ago that even after that disastrous GDP number we had in South Africa, which showed us pretty much teetering in recession at minus, what it was, 0.6%, the Rand didn't budge. It didn't move. It was steady. It did its thing. I think it was traded down at like 14.57, 14.58, the dollar, and it didn't move. And all it needed was a little bit of good news. I mean, we know when it comes to the Rand, it's one of certainly the emerging market currencies of choice for the speculators. And there's very little fundamentals that go into the price of the Rand, whether we like it or not. And all it needed was a bit of good news, a bit of emerging market strength, certainly a bit of dollar weakness coming in perhaps as well, Ray. It's, you know, those who are going abroad in at Christmas time, enjoy it. The Rand is nice and strong today.
Yeah. Other winners and losers? I saw Discovery up over 6%.
Discovery over 6%. anything UK facing. So whether it was Into Properties, Hammerson, Old Mutual at a cracking day, I saw Sappi was up. It was anything that was dual listed in the United Kingdom that's been a little bit under pressure, got that relief pop and quite a big weighting too. So it's not only do we get the kick in from the United Kingdom and our dual listeds, we also got the emerging market run as well. And it was really, as you said, it was 1.7% up. We haven't seen a day like this in a while. Nice way to finish the week.
Where do you see, let me put you on the spot as well, you heard me speaking to Professor Raymond Parsons, where do you see the UK going? Because we saw pound sterling as well today, having a great day.
Having a great, 119 on cable, as they call it, against the dollar. That was back in August. Almost 135 at the early hours of this morning. I mean, unbelievable run on the pound. Look, I think is what I can tell, and I'm putting my trading hat on here. There's a lot of shorts out there. There's a lot of people that weren't quite sure. They were talking about possibly a hung parliament. So a lot of speculation covering those positions, maybe squeezing it 3-4 pence, up to where it is now. So going forward, I don't know. I'd like to think that this is the easy part. You know, standing in front of 10 Downing Street with his dog in his arms and his girlfriend next to him is the easy side. The hard work begins on the 31st of January when they need to discuss and negotiate that exit. So my gut says to me, maybe this is a buy the rumour, sell the news. If you're long sterling at 135, 136, maybe it's time to take some money off the table.
Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth, great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you. Thank you.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Right, coming up shortly, the brutal biz quiz. And you need to pay attention now to the best bits of The Money Show, because a little bit later on, I'll be asking you several questions and the clues are actually hid in the best bits of The Money Show. Last week, we heard that the local economy, or our GDP, shrank by 0.6%. We thought this was shocking and started using the R words. In other words, we don't want recession. On Monday, many said, hold my beer, Eskom just announced stage 6 load shedding. Independent economist Tabi Lioka tried to summarise how most of us were feeling.
I'm tired. I think South Africa is just a very tiring country. It's exhausting. One problem after the other. We've just found out that we've lost 6,000 megawatts of electricity. That's what stage 6 means. So stage 6 at 6 is 6,000 megawatts shed.
Yeah, I mean, and as you say, it's exhausting. And I mean, I'm sure the politicians who are meant to be overseeing this thing are exhausted too, but it's their job to fix it. And there's no sense of real urgency here either, Tabi.
Definitely no sense of real urgency. But also as South Africans, I'm very surprised at the shock, because we saw this coming. We saw this coming over the years and no one said anything. And then we've come to the point where just about all our state entities are not working. And it's not that they're not working because the executives and the boards are not trying to make it work. It's almost an impossible task. I say this out of experience because I sit on the board of one of the state-owned entities. You find yourself in a hole and you're basically digging yourself out of this hole. And no matter what, they need to be recapitalized to be salvaged. And that's taxpayers' money. Taxpayers are sick and tired of dedicating their hard-earned earnings towards state-owned entities. And it's come to a point where it's actually quite depressing to see some of our state-owned entities that are supposed to work efficiently going basically into business rescue. Some of them are likely to be sold. And it's really quite depressing.
I mean,
and let's not forget that, let's not forget that last week we had a very sobering GDP figure of a contraction of 0.6%. And after the contraction, that meant that forecasts had to be revised down. So GDP is now expected to be about 0.3%.
All right, let's stay with Eskom and SOEs. And a few years ago, Future Growth's Chief Investment Officer, Andrew Cantor, got into some trouble when he sounded warning bells about the state of SOEs. He said he wouldn't be putting any money into that. Well, Bruce then spoke to him and said, do you feel vindicated after now we hit stage six load shedding? This is what he had to say.
The direction of travel is going the right way. It is slower. Okay. And all of us would hope, right? But the direction of travel is going the right way, that the government, the president was in the cabinet, were willing to consider a broad range of appointees to the CEO of Eskom and not take a purely racial view. I'm sure they looked across the racial spectrum to find people with skills and experience who could try and get the job done. Tells me that you're moving away from a purely political solution to get to something that is an operational solution. And that's not a racial comment about who's better or worse. It's just saying they were willing to look broadly. The fact that they were willing to throw SA into business rescue, which is a really strong statement. After having a good debate about a strike with labor and hold the line, and now throw it into business rescue, which is really a strong statement. The direction of travel is correct. And I also, by the way, I have to say, I've always liked the tone of voice coming from Pravin Gordhan once he was back in a position as Minister of Public Enterprise, and I like the tone of voice from the chairman of Eskom, Jabu, who speaks the truth. He speaks firmly, clearly, and concisely. They're saying we're dealing with the past, trying to clean it up and move into the future. But strategy must be followed by execution. So the 2008 story about wet coal, and here we are 10 years later, strategy wasn't followed by execution, so we're in the doing again.
And then Dr. Adrian Saville, CEO of Cannon Asset Managers and professor at the Gordon Institute of Business Sciences, shared his rough calculations on the cost of load shedding to our local economy. Bruce asked whether this is the first self-imposed recession.
Yeah, I think it is exactly that, Bruce. It is self-imposed. It could have been avoided. Look, another way, not to be, if I equate it to incumbents, and I do that not to make any sort of political commentary in any shape or form, but it just helps us think about, the size of the economic impact. Perhaps another way to put it would be 15 billion rand would bail out SAA in its entirety. That's the extent of just 1 week of load shedding. It's extraordinary in its impact, and that's the number that we feel in the here and now. And it's particularly pronounced or elevated in labor-intensive sectors: manufacturing, mining, agriculture. And so it's not surprising then that with this 10 years of load shedding and energy insecurity, that the manufacturing sector's output today is lower than it was in 2009. So we have a manufacturing recession for a decade.
This is an issue of an opportunity cost as well. I mean, you put a real number on what this final quarter has cost us. But we've lost a decade of potential investment, a decade of potential growth, a decade of job creation, a decade of hope, a decade of opportunity that is gone. It's wiped out. Simply because we've not done the basics of running an economy, and that is securing energy.
Yeah, you can never reverse that time and sort of buy it back and put it into the barrel as if it wasn't lost. It has been lost. The job now, and I think Andrew Cantor and Andrew King point out, the importance of getting the design right, the build right, and I would add to Andrew King's point, the management right, and Andrew Cantor's point that certainly the direction of travel is better. We are in better shape today than we were a year or 2 years ago. But the work here is not done, and this is a critical component in order to restore investor confidence. Forget about consumer confidence, to restore investor confidence in the South African economy. And so the part that we don't see is the investment that's going to be withheld that would otherwise have been there in 2020. And you just never see that missing part.
All right, there was some good news this week. Grant Patterson, he's Edcon's CEO. He's giving his surplus power back to the grid. He explains why he's actually doing this.
Over the past few years, much out of interest rather than sort of any duty, I've just started building up photovoltaic panels on my house and buying the inverters and the batteries and stuff. The rules about putting power back into the grid are reasonably strict. And just recently, I upgraded my whole system, and it gave me the ability to say, click a button that said, you know, all excess PV power back onto the grid, called feed in. So I tagged that this morning and found my system pushing, you know, kilowatts or 2 kilowatts of power back into the grid.
Okay, I mean, so it's a fairly simple process, provided you've got extraordinary technology in order to do so. And this is, I mean, from your perspective, more of sort of practical interest to understand what is possible.
Yes, you know, I'm playing around with things I'm interested in, but there's a very serious case to be made for, and it's done around the world, by the way, by municipalities, by encouraging residents to put PV panels into their house, buy a thing called a grid-tied inverter, which means your panels are connected to the grid permanently. The municipality then measures the amount of power you give back to the grid, and they pay you a rate for that, and then they measure the amount of power you take from the grid, and they net the two off. The general rules are you have to buy something. You can't make a business out of this, but you can generate power for the municipality.
Right, those are the best bits of the money show. I hope you've been paying attention. It's very important because it's time for the brutal biz quiz, just for fun tonight. I want to see if you're going to be the champion of this week. So what I'll be doing is asking you a series of questions. If you are the last person standing at the end of all those questions and answers, you'll be the champion of the week. Do give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. I want to see if you've got what it takes. Question number one, whose Twitter bio reads like this? A teenager working on her anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. There we go. That's a difficult one. Whose Twitter bio reads like this? A teenager working on her anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Do give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Right, this is where I ask you a series of questions. If you have the answers or the final answer, you're the last person standing, you are the champion of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Now, I asked you tonight the first question. Whose Twitter bio reads like this? A teenager working on her anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Let's go to Malakapuru in Morningside. Hello, Malakapuru.
Hello, how are you?
Good. The answer is?
Donald Trump.
No, it's not. I'm sorry. Timothy in Randburg, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what's the answer?
It's Greta Thunberg.
You're quite right. Quite right. She is the 2019 Time Person of the Year. She changed her bio after US President Donald Trump said in a tweet that Thunberg must work on her anger management problem, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill, he said. Okay. Right, so, okay, my money's on you tonight, Timothy. Who was the Time Person of the Year for 2016?
Oof, I'm not sure.
Oh, Timothy, you were doing so well. Nobantu, hi, good evening. Who was the Time Person of the Year for 2016? Nobantu, are you with us?
I think it was Tulima Donzella.
No, it wasn't. It was somebody international. Come on, it's an easy one. Who was the Time Person of the Year for 2016? Mpumi in Boksburg, hi. Mpumi?
Hi, I think it was the peacemakers.
No, it wasn't. He's not a peacemaker, I'm afraid. I said, well, I gave it away almost. He is not a peacemaker. Let's come on, Taryn in Santon, save us. Who was the Time Person of the Year for 2016?
It was sadly Donald Trump.
It was indeed. Okay, all right, you're doing pretty well here. Okay, now, I tell you what, let's make this the final question because we're running out of time and it's Friday and it's the holidays and let's not be too brutal. Come on now, Taryn, who has won the right to wear the Power of Unity crown this year?
Ooh.
The Power of Unity crown. She's beautiful. She really is, you know.
Zozi Tuzi.
Yes. You know what? It's Friday. It's a long weekend. Taryn in Santon, you are the champion for this weekend. Well done.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Lovely, lovely. Well done, Taryn in Sandton. You're quite right. It's such a nice way to sort of end the money show. Miss South Africa won the Miss Universe pageants over the weekend. She's the first beauty queen to wear it. The sparkling centerpiece of the crown is a golden canary diamond weighing in at a whopping 62.83 carats. Taryn in Sandton, well done. You're the champion of the money show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bank that believes long-term partnerships deliver sustainable results. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
That wraps up the Money Show. Have a safe but great long weekend. It's just after 7 o'clock.